Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom Yehudim, shalom Lebnei Noach, shalom Goyim. It's the second day, Hey Bechodesh Shvat, Parashas Bo, Tashin Pei Aleph, 5781, Monday, 18 January 2021. You're listening to Phantom Nation, coming to you from the unique nation state of the unique Jewish people, whose identity is unlike all others. In this edition of Phantom Nation, we will vivisect the identity crisis of one of the most iconic Sabras, a native of the land, that's a Sabra, whose Zionist forebears were on a futile quest to save the Jews by transforming them into pseudo-Gentiles. The iconic Sabra under examination will be Israel's most famous scientist of politics, Dr. Joseph Balin, Ph.D., a doctor of the philosophy of political science. Yossi Balin is more than a mere master of the science of politics. He is a philosopher of this science. That's what Ph.D. means. A philosopher who invented the famous Oslo peace process, touted at the time to be the onset of the Messianic Age of Peace, when in truth it did not turn out that way. Dr. Balin was the intellectual architect of the peace between Israel and the PLO, the Palestine Liberal Organization, because Dr. Balin believed in the legitimate right to national liberation for the allegedly primeval Palestinian people, in residence in Eretz Yisrael since the beginning of time, whose ancient, beloved homeland was stolen from them by Yossi's people, who had to make it up to them, make it up to their victims by awarding them the heart of the land, promised to the Jewish people, because in the universe, according to Dr. Balin, there is no God of Israel, no promise was made. It is all, as Karl Marx said, the opiate of the masses. And therefore, there's nothing to fight over. As one of Yossi's role models, Moshe Dayan, said when he handed the Temple Mount back to the Muslims, the Temple Mount has no significance to Israelis. In his mind, the dominant leading community of post-religious social democrats, it has only, he said, historic significance. And it's been the goal of post-religious Zionists ever since to hand back Judea and Samaria because it's too Jewish, because it has no meaning to them, because Zionism meant the rebranding of the Jewish identity as a national identity only, lacking in all religious dimension. And we'll get started after the following messages from Israel News Talk Radio.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel?
Shalom, I'm Natalie Zipinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom la Yehudim, shalom la Bnei Noach, shalom la Goyim. It's the second day, Hey Bechodesh Shvat, Parashas Bo, Tavshin Pei Aleph, 5781, Monday, 18 January 2021. You're listening to Phantom Nation, coming to you from the land of Israel. That means he who strives with God, if not for the Israeli left. Take, for example, the commentary last week on the immigration statistics for 220 that were just published. Commentary by Dr. Yosef Balin, Ph.D., mastermind of the Nobel Prize-winning Oslo Plan for Peace that did not quite work out that way. Yossi Balin is the quintessential anti-religious secular Israeli. He entered adulthood after the army by working as a journalist for the Labor Party's daily newspaper, who early on attached himself to Shimon ben Yitzchak Peres, which self-chosen last name Peres means vulture. Yitzchak Rabin called Balin Peres's poodle. Over time, via his attachment to Peres, Begin was appointed spokesman of the Israeli Labor Party from 1977 to 1984. That's 8 years inclusive. He served as well as government secretary from 1984 to 1986. That's a high position. And later as director general for political affairs of the foreign ministry from 86 to 88. And he had a half a dozen other similar positions over the years. He was elected to the Knesset in 1988 because of his position in the Labor Party list, not because he had any constituency of supporters who asked him to run and serve. Nobody voted for Yossi specifically. It's a partyocracy here. And because he was placed on the list, he became a member of Knesset. He also got himself, sometime, a PhD from Tel Aviv University. He became a doctor of the science of politics. Dr. Begin, as he is introduced these days on radio or TV, received his doctorate for a dissertation that began as a series of interviews with Labor Party leaders published in the Labor Party newspaper. He then transformed these interviews into chapters in a book that he gave an academic title to, something like Labor Zionism's Generational Shifts in Ideology. I make that up. And in it, he described the differences between the founding fathers of Labor Zionism and the current generation descended from them. Remember, a doctorate in science means making a unique contribution to the field, but here was the future Dr. Begin, PhD, submitting as his doctoral dissertation the original thought that the younger generation thinks differently from their parents. And for this unique contribution to the science of politics, Yossi Begin became Dr. Begin, who then in 1993 orchestrated the groundbreaking Nobel Prize-winning Oslo peace process. Yes, those post-religious Israeli leftist Rabin and Peres, who received the award in person, standing next to their new partner Arafat, the Egyptian Muslim brother, masquerading as an ancient Palestinian. But the real deep thinker, the architect of the Oslo peace process, was neither Rabin nor Peres, but Dr. Begin, PhD. We were told at the time that we were on the cusp of the messianic era of peace, though, truth be told, things didn't work out that way, did they? Instead of peace, we got crowded rush hour buses in our cities exploding and killing some inside instantaneously, and the others, who did not die instantaneously, burnt alive, screaming in satanic pain. One imagines that in 1993, when the famous doctor of the science of politics sprang his peace plan on Israel and the world, he used at that time, one imagines, a state-of-the-art computer hardware and software in his political science laboratory, where he fed in all the data into the machine and asked the computer, how do we make peace with the victims of our Zionism? And the computer answered, Dr. Begin, you have to import into the country 40,000 maniacal, homicidal Muslim terrorists, give them guns and ammunition, a budget, places to live, and the messianic age of secular Zionist peace will blanket the land, close quote. But again, things did not work out that way. What we were witness to were our nubile youth hanging out on a Saturday night at a nightclub who were targeted by one of those suicidal, homicidal Muslim assassins who murdered like 20 of them, with the survivors maimed, crippled, and mutilated for life. And one decisive factor for all that ghastly terror was Dr. Begin's misconception of what the violence here has always been about. Basic to the Oslo peace process was the insistence by Dr. Begin and Tzipi Livni and their community that we must not see our conflict with what they call the Palestinians as a religious conflict. If so, then there's no chance for peace, so let's call it a political conflict between two equal nations, which then have a chance to come to a nice compromise. Let's keep religion out of it, was their deep thinking. And as I document in my book, for the first quarter century in the halls of the UN, there was not one resolution referencing a Palestinian nationality that was a party to the Arab-Israeli conflict, as the MSN labels them today. The first mention of Palestinians in a General Assembly resolution came in 1970, And as my book shows, the invention of this heretofore unheard of nation was the handiwork not only of world anti-Jewry, anti-Jew Gentiles, but also anti-Jew Jews, the Jewish left, the Israeli left, people like Dr. Balin and cohorts in the anti-religious Israeli left. Think of that. The anti-religious Israeli left thought it could go into business with the so-called Palestinians, which they saw as a movement of national liberation, just like Zionism. And the two peoples could compromise and live one next to the other in peace. These Israeli leftists were willing to share the land west of the Jordan River with these so-called Palestinians, and never mind Rabin and Peres, those two Marxist numbskulls, two of the most uneducated Jews in Jewish history, a history of a people holding high, higher than physical prowess, education and the life of the mind. It was not important to them that Arafat, the one they shook hands with on the White House lawn, was the son of the founding father of the Muslim Brotherhood in Mandatory Palestine, and that he and his fellow founders of Fatah, all eight of them, had been raised in the Muslim Brotherhood. The irony of these Marxism-indoctrinated atheists, who dismissed religion as foolishness, thought the Muslims across the negotiating table were Palestinians, and just like them, political leaders of a nation, the nation of Palestine. The Israeli left helped to invent that idea with whom they could arrive at a mutually satisfactory division of the land, meaning in Yossi Balin's mind, Judea and Samaria, whose growing number of communities of mostly religious Jews was Yossi Balin's worst nightmare. For him and his community, religion is stupid, and it's nothing to fight over. The left has a mantra, and it goes like this. Everybody knows what the solution is to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The problem is how to implement the creation of a Palestinian state in the West Bank, which the Palestinians have insisted since 1993 must also be Jew-free. All the Israeli settlers will have to go. And that was just fine with the famous doctor of political science. The reality was that labor Zionism had its great successes, but was otherwise, by this time, finished. There were no more chalutzim, pioneers, as they used to be called. There were no more seed groups of idealistic young labor Zionist youth planning on establishing new settlements somewhere. Among the IDF's Nachal division before the Six-Day War, the ideal was founding a new community along the ceasefire lines as a form of national defense, as they became farmers, soldier farmers. But those days are gone. The ruling labor elite was ready in 1967 to return the majority of land taken from the enemy, and they had no desire to claim the right to build new Jewish communities on it. The occupied territories became a theoretical bargaining chip for them. For a decade after the Six-Day War, with labor still in power waiting for the fantasized phone call from the Arabs to come in, they want to hear the word over the telephone of peace, in exchange for which Israel would return what it took in battle. But when that phone call never came after 10 years, the religious Zionist movement arose to take the place of the now moribund labor Zionist Chalutzim in pressing for new Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria. The Arabs, after 10 years, had shown no interest in land for peace and getting back the land they lost if the price was recognizing freedom for the Jews in an independent state of their own. And Israelis like Yossi Balin did not like that big time. And one of his cohorts, the late Ron Pundak, admitted after Oslo collapsed in blood and gore that the primary purpose of the Oslo peace for him and Yossi was less to make peace with the Arabs than to stop the burgeoning religious Zionists from building new communities in Judea and Samaria. Their labor Zionist zeal had long ago died and decomposed. Yossi and friends were bitter, secular Israelis, for in their minds the state of Israel was to be a normal nation state, meaning totally separate from any religious identity. And Yossi is still at it, still at war with the Jewish religion. And after some music, we'll deprogram his latest verbal aggression against the religion of the Jewish people. Thank you.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country from Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
So, last week, the government, the Ministry of Immigration, I imagine, released the figures for immigration in 2020. And of the 24,000 or so came on Aliyah, only one-third were Jews, thanks to the labor Zionists who founded the state, who for good and bad reasons ignored the definition of a Jew that is thousands of years old. And ironically, they chose to respect the Nazis' definition of a Jew. The good motivation was to be kind to people victimized by the Nazis because they had one Jewish grandparent, and that legislation is called the Grandparent Clause. The infant state of 650,000 in 1948 was also desperate for population for immigrants. The bad motivation was the secular Zionist quest to create a normal nationality. No more of this chosen people stuff. No more of not being able to eat pig meat. I myself saw on American TV in 1993, when at the moment, in secret, behind the scenes, Dr. Balin and fellow anti-religious academics were negotiating with the Jew killers, and there was Shimon Peres on the McNeil-era NewsHour on PBS answering a question by saying that the purpose of the Zionist movement was to normalize the existence of the Jewish people. And in truth, it's not normal for a nation, except this one, to claim that the creator of the universe deeded this tiny country to this one tiny people, with the demand, of course, that they live in it according to his hundreds of commandments. That's not normal at all. Uncle Shimon, the national village idiot, later dreamed in public, after the ecstasy of signing the Oslo peace documents, that someday Israel might even join the Arab League of States. Shimon Peres, in his autobiography, aptly entitled Battling for Peace, not battling for Jewish rights and freedom, that would be too Jewish. In his autobiography, Shimon ben Yitzchak tells of courting his future bride, Sonia, not by reading love poetry to her, but sections out of Das Kapital, which he thought was the greatest book ever, and never mind others judge it to be the most boring book ever, and besides the handiwork of a crackpot. So, in Israel Hayom, a newspaper last week, the famous doctor of political science, Dr. Balin, opined on this latest demographic information and characteristically shrugged, saying, "This is no disaster, it's a blessing, unless the definition of Jewishness is strictly religious rather than national." Hundreds of thousands of non-Jews who arrived in Israel from the former Soviet Union are an inseparable part of the Jewish nation, and are unwilling to convert. Close quote. The dishonesty here is nauseating. These Gentiles are citizens of the state of Israel, which is not the same as being, as Yossi says, an inseparable part of the Jewish nation. The Jewish religion, way back when, provides legislation for the residents in this country of non-Jews. Likewise, the state of Israel respects the rights of all citizens to basic human rights, which does not necessarily mean all are part of the Jewish nation. Quote, he says, "We would do well to register anyone who comes to Israel under the law of return as a Jew." Close quote. That's the so-called grandfather clause granting citizenship to such non-Jews. Yossi goes further. He wants to call them Jews. And I say the invention of that grandfather clause was rooted in good and evil intentions. 30 years ago, when the mass Aliyah began with the fall of the Soviet Union, the secular labor Zionists and the Jewish agency working in the Soviet Union, the dying Soviet Union, were only too happy to assist Gentiles to immigrate here, not for them to be sticklers about the religious definition. I remember one Independence Day when the late Yossi Sarid's party paid for a celebratory ad in the newspapers touting Israel as, quote, a multicultural society. Yossi Balin has said of his upbringing that It was kind of religious until the Yom Kippur War, when he lost his faith. And I'm reminded of a prominent professor of mine, the late Theodore Gaster, heretical son of Rabbi Moses Gaster, former Grand Rabbi of the UK in 1917, who after Chaim Weizmann was most instrumental in getting the Balfour Declaration declared. Professor Gaster said that those who lose faith after a catastrophe never had it to begin with. Yossi Beilin and what is jokingly known in Israel as the State of Tel Aviv, the Jews are a nation, which is a category of community apart from religion. Ironically, the return to Zionism was led after 18 centuries by Jews who did not want to be Jews, who paradoxically saw in Zionism not the rescue of the Jewish people, but their transformation as an escape from endless aggression by non-Jews. The idea was that if the Jews become just like everybody else, anti-Semitism will disappear. Stop being Jewish, stop thinking religiously, and then persecution will end. When the evidence of history suggests it is the flight from one's religious identity that brings on the worst persecution. In early 19th century Germany, Jews in a torrent fled to a nearby church to get baptized, not because they had become believers, but really just the opposite. It was an empty ritual which provided great concrete results. They could now enter into heretofore prohibited occupations. Ironically, in light of the contemporary behavior of Reform Jews, the first Reformers were attempting to maintain Jewish identity when so many were converting and leaving. The idea was to modernize the Jewish religion, which in practice meant making it appear more Christian. No more wearing of characteristically Jewish garments. The Sabbath was moved to Sunday. The dietary laws that are a bulwark against socializing with Gentiles, which leads to marrying them, were trashed. They called their meeting houses temples, not synagogues, to tell their Christian neighbors they were loyal Germans who had no intention of returning to the land of Israel to build the third temple. Their temple was right there in Deutschland. They designed as well the interior of their temples to mimic a Christian sanctuary, without the cross, of course, moving, for example, the table on which the Torah scroll is read, moving it from the center of the room, which made the unconscious statement it would no longer be the center of these Jews' lives. Embedded in Yossi Beilin's dreadful Oslo peace process was his own secular Zionist quest to redefine the Jewish people as a normal nation that is lacking in any religious dimension. For example, France and Spain were, for centuries, Catholic societies, which did not stop the two peoples from going to war with each other. Likewise, the French and the Germans, both Christian peoples. What divides nations is territory, language, cuisine, national garments. What Yossi Beilin and his fellow post-religious Jews do not understand, do not want to understand, is that the Jewish nation is uniquely a nation constituted by its religion. Without the religion, there's no Jewish nation. The Jewish nation has been, so far, the only immortal nation, and the reason for that is the unique definition as a religious nation. It took Christians 15 centuries to rebel against the church in Rome in the Protestant Reformation, that finally recognized the necessity of separating church and state, which was an idea Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher, our rabbi, he understood that way back when. He anointed his brother Aaron the first high priest because he was the greatest older brother in history, but then turned over the political leadership before his death to Joshua of the tribe of Ephraim, which helped to knit together the tribes, and because Joshua deserved it, meritocratically. Jewish history also contains the story of the heroic, priestly Hashmonaim, the Maccabees, who, despite the first generation's heroics as saving the people, later on the family corrupted themselves by assuming political power too. The Jewish people is unique for the inseparable, inextricable religious dimension of its nationality, which condition the secular Zionists have been at war with since the beginning.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany's but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
So, if the concern in this episode of Phantom Nation has been the bipolar Jewish identity as simultaneously both nationality and religion, consider the news yesterday in Jerusalem Post Online that Prime Minister Netanyahu, quote, hinted that he could ask the government to issue a declaration of intent to legalize 46, close quote, what the Post calls, quote, West Bank settler outposts within days. One factor is the timing, close quote. That is, before China's criminal mouthpiece in Washington becomes president. Yes, that's important. But another factor, I believe, is never spoken about, evidenced by the historic truth that no Israeli government since 1967 has ever staked a claim to the right to own and live in Judea and Samaria. Listen again to the PM, to the Prime Minister, quote, he could ask the government to issue a declaration of intent to legalize 46 West Bank settler outposts, close quote. First of all, notice, too, these are not Israelis living there. They're not Jews living there. They're settlers. And according to the Jerusalem Post, they are living in the West Bank. And while some of these communities have been occupied and lived in for two decades now, they have yet to be legalized. And therefore, they are officially illegal, because no government of Israel has declared categorically that we Jews have the right to build homes and communities on barren hilltops on land the League of Nations explicitly recognized as the historic homeland of the Jewish people. Land no less, taken in 1967 in righteous self-defense against an aggressor bent on destroying the world's only Jewish state. I mean, after 54 years, the state of Israel has never asserted its right to ownership of all the land west of the Jordan River. What is this legalized 46 outposts? It's nonsense. If these 46 have the right to be judged legal communities for Jews to live in, then every settlement in Judea and Samaria deserved to be so legalized, to be claimed without an ounce of guilt, to have been built on Jewish land. And if that denies ownership to Arabs claiming to be the land's ancient Palestinian landlords, so be it. Because their claim is bogus. They're not Palestinians. They're Arabs. In 1948, there were 7 independent Arab states. Today, there are 3 times that number. And they spread over a landmass larger than the United States by about 40%, so the Arabs have no need for more land, and certainly not in the heart of the Jewish people's promised land. To claim that is to aggress against the Jewish religion. As today, the Europeans deny the right of Jews in parts of Belgium, as of a couple weeks ago, to slaughter the animals that they eat the Jewish way, that is thousands of years old. Likewise, the anti-Jew American entrepreneur Andrew Yang, who wants to be mayor of New York City, he wants to outlaw circumcision. That's the material concrete symbol of the founding covenant between God and Abraham. The nerve of these anti-Jews who believe they have the right to dictate to us what is permissible and impermissible in our religion? What comes to mind are the numerous times Gentile authorities in our dispersion who ordered the Jews to attend sermons and classes in Christianity, who also availed themselves of anti-Jew Jews, apostates, who knew enough Talmud to tell the priests certain expressions must be deleted. Christians are not going to like them, and so the Christians edited our text. This behavior continues to this very day in Christian missionaries who know nothing of Hebrew yet believe the translation they read is enough for them to have the authority to teach Jews the real meaning of what is written, including all the alleged foreshadowings in our Bible of the coming of the man from Nazareth that we Jews just do not see. Problem is, of course, that aside from common objects that can be directly and simply translated, for example, the word for fork in English can be called a tenedor in Spanish or a fourchette in French, and we understand. But beyond that, much of so-called translation is really interpretation. And in fact, at the UN, simultaneous translators are called interpreters, not translators. Take, for example, the first words of the Bible in English. In the beginning, when the word for beginning does not appear there in the Hebrew, these 3 English words interpret one word in Hebrew, whose first letter is the preposition in, attached to a noun that ends with a common adjectival adverbial suffix, with the noun in the middle being the word for head, as in go to the head of the class. Only in this case, we see the creation of all that is beginning in the mind, in the head of the Creator. It's curious, I think, that in 54 years, Israel has never been able to claim the right of the Jewish people to live in peace and security on land in communities that dispossessed no allegedly ancient Palestinian from his allegedly prehistoric ancestral sod. Every community since 1967 has been built on barren land. In 54 years, even the anti-Jew New York Times has never once been able to publish even one photograph of an Arab family, say, camping by the roadside in cardboard shacks because the evil Jews drove them from their homes and the land that the Jews stole from them. And while it's true that every Israeli government since 1967 could rightly say it's not the politic thing right now to claim our rights, but they do that mostly because, as post-religious people, they are embarrassed to cite the Bible as the real deed to this land that the goyim of the world have to respect. This is our tiny ancient land, and the goyim must cease spreading the anti-Semitic lie that there used to be a Palestinian nation here whose land we stole from them. 1,000 years ago, almost, the great biblical exegete Rashi began his magisterial commentary on the 5 books by questioning the purpose of the first 11 chapters that have nothing to do with the Jewish people, when the principal purpose of the book is the presentation of the laws, the commandments. And Rashi said that the reason for the introductory chapters on physical creation of the world is to support the future promise of the land to the Jewish people as made by the creator of the land itself, who has the right to allot land to whatever nation he wants to allot. And why is that necessary? Rashi asked, because in the future there will be Gentiles who will accuse the Jews, this is from the Middle Ages, on the basis of their own holy book, of stealing Canaan from the Canaanites and the Amorites and the Jebusites, etc. Just like today. 1,000 years after the age of Rashi in medieval Europe, the Jews are accused of stealing this country from its rightful owners, which is another way of rebelling against the God of Israel, who was the creator of the Jews, and through them, Christians and Muslims too. To respect Israel's right to Judea and Samaria is to respect the promise of this land, but both the steppe religions insist. The Jews violated their covenant and their right to this land. It's now null and void, which is impossible because our Bible says numerous times that God will never completely abandon us and never cancel his gift of this country to us. Okay, gotta go. I do 3 other programs each week, just like this one, for subscribers at www.thephantom-nation.com. I myself try not to miss a Tucker Carlson program in order to keep up with what's going on in the States, and there are subscribers who feel the same about my program. Your subscription is spent in Judea and Samaria. Subscribe for a month, and if at the end you want to cancel, by all means, and your subscription will be refunded in full. You can also buy my book called Phantom Nation, There's No Other Like It, on Israel's Endless War for Survival. The music you heard was provided by Daniel Ahaviel and Gabriel Hasson. And as always, we conclude with Yosef Gorduner. Until next time, I'm Shai Ben Tekoa. יש בחירה עצור לרגע תתבונן ותביט לאן אתה רץ מה התכלית העולם הוא רק פרוסדור לחיי העולם הבא וצריך להתחזק, לחזור בתשובה. תנאי ננאי, תנאי ננאי, תנאי ננאי, תנאי ננאי. השם יתברך, בנפלא אותך. שלח לנו בכל דור צדיקים שהובילו את עם ישראל עד ביאתו של גואל בדרך הישר לפניו יתברך עצור לרגע ותשליך את כל החוכמות תסתכל ותודה על האמת שכל תקוותינו היא בזכות הצדיקים בוא ניתן את ליבנו אליהם תנאי ננאי תנאי ננאי Tanai nanai, tanai nanai. Tanai nanai, tanai nanai. Tanai nanai, nai nanai. Tanai nanai, tanai nanai. Tanai nanai, tanai nanai. Tanai nanai, tanai nanai. Tanai.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the Israel News Talk Radio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.